Time to lay the cards on the table. It was a phrase that came back to Doc at this time, and set off an association of ideas in his head. He remembered the Ace of Spades, the death card, and the dead man's hand. He should be a dead man by rights, many times over. But he wasn't, so maybe he had a lucky hand. Maybe they had a lucky hand. Certainly, there seemed to be a variety of weaponry now on display that he had not seen before. JB had been the first to tip his hand, at Ryan's request. The armorer, never keen on revealing what he carried, even though he could talk about it forever and a day, had understood why Ryan felt that they should declare first. If they wanted to totally win over these people, they had to meet them more than halfway to begin with. So, JB had them take out their guns and lay them down. Then their blades. His Tecna, Ryan's Panga, Jack's collection of leaf-bladed throwing knives. Oddly, he had noticed that Robert warmed slightly when he saw the number of knives Jack carried, and the crafty places of concealment he used. Ryan had also thrown down his scarf, weighted as it was at the end, for use as a concealed weapon. Then, JB had emptied his bag. Grens of varying types, gas, frag, stun, and high-X, were carefully emptied out onto his coat, which he had spread on the sandy ground for such a purpose. They were joined by blocks of Plas-X and their detonators, carefully separated. Finally, he took out the spare ammo of all kinds that he carried in his pockets.
Oh, who would have thought so much stuff could come from such a little guy? No wonder you people have such a reputation.
I guess that's a compliment. So how about you return the favor? We've shown you ours, so why not show us yours?
There was a time when saying that would have gotten you far, far more than you bargained for, little man. Guess I'll come clean with you. And you better do the same, Brianna.
The icy blonde said nothing. Rhonda began to unload the pods on her bike, laying out the contents. For such a seemingly light structure, the bike was obviously immensely strong. Not only did it carry her bulk, it also contained the short, wide-barreled gun with the collapsible stock that she had previously displayed. There were also several types of ammo for the gun, rockets, frag, and incendiary grenades, and high-X. She had a smaller pistol, which looked like an antique from the early 20th century, a small 6.75mm with a pearl handle, a lady's pistol, which seemed absurd with her bulk, but had the advantage of being easily concealed and good for close-range shooting. Not that anyone suspected they would need it in this instance. She also had several metal boxes with dials and faders, in some cases exposed circuitry.
These are things that got handed down to me. I've worked on them over the years, found out how they ticked, maybe even improved them. Stranger things have happened. See this one? This one is a doozy. It's a scanner. Originally, it could pick up any kind of broadcast, analog or digital, that was within a half-mile radius. It has a filter so that you can select from the jumble and zero in. Not that you need to do that these days, of course, as there isn't much in the air. But that's okay, because I've adapted it so that it can pick up any scanner signals. If you like, this little beauty can tell if we're being spied on. Now then, I can see that you're asking yourselves where that's any use. Okay, so we know we're being spied on, big deal. We can't do anything about it. Oh yes, my friends, we can. See this box? It went with the first box from the beginning. It was designed to work with a filter on the first box and jam on any signals that you wanted. So I've adapted it to respond to the other box in exactly the same way. Hey, we're being spied on? One flick of the switch and shazam, we're not.
She put the second box down and rooted around in the remaining pods. She brought out an axe, several knives of varying ages, with stains and rusting that could have been neglect, or could have been blood, and an SMG that Ryan and JB recognized at once as a Heckler & Koch MP5, a gun that Ryan had once favored.
Got these, too. The axe and knives I tend to use for practical stuff rather than fighting, and I don't have much ammo for the MP5, which is why I tend to keep it stashed. But I'm always looking. There is one other thing.
She turned back and rooted around in one of the storage pods, coming up with a small transmitter and a handful of tiny objects like the one on the locket Ryan had used to summon the Technomads.
This is a personal comm transmitter. We've all got them. That thing you got from the rail ghost before he kicked it is a variation on these.
She held out the small objects. Like the red transmitter in the locket, they seemed too small to be of any use. But this was obviously not the case.
They act like locators. The personal comm things are radios, working on analog and digital frequencies. Just means that we can talk to someone, no matter what tech they're using. Might be very useful. I haven't got spares, but maybe the others have, if they're generous enough to share. Easy to use, and will help keep us informed on whatever the hell we do. Anyway, that's about it.
You say that as though it were not an impressive display. Those scanner jammers of yours may be most useful indeed. Do you not think, Ryan?
Yeah, you're right there, Doc. But we really need to have more firepower. What about your people, Corwin?
The green-haired, pointy-eared man considered that.
I will show you, but I fear you may be disappointed. We like to live in peace as much as possible, and our armament is primarily defensive.
With which he turned to his people and gestured. His people returned to the parasails, and in short order had unpacked the small storage pods and capsules that were cunningly located in the crevices of the slings that carried and distributed the weight of the passengers and the small engines. Corwin beckoned them all to him. Brianna's people, the companions, and Rhonda all moved toward the parasails. Aware that this may leave them open, Ryan cast his eye to Jack, who nodded.
I can see and hear from the dune. Someone need keep eyes open.
Good idea. I can do that, too. You need help?
I can manage, but extra eyes and ears not a bad thing.
The two men peeled off from the gathering group to keep surveillance, while the rest paid attention to Corwin, who pointed to several small round bombs housed in a khaki polycarbon net.
Bombs and missiles are a necessity, but heavy. We've got some materials from which we make our own. Supplies are limited, hence our reluctance to use them except in emergencies. Plasex, motion detonators, and a light casing. Even so, we can only carry 6 per parasail at any time. This is more use to us.
He indicated a small plastic box device that all parasails carried. Each was slightly different in its arrangement of wires that wound in and out of the box, placed in small junction sockets in varying combinations.
We use it defensively, but it could be used as an offensive weapon. Each one of these sends out a different set of frequencies. Some are very high, some are lower. To produce really low frequency waves, it would be necessary to have a unit that would be too heavy for the parasails, at least using the materials we have. That is a pity, as with ultra-low frequency, it would be possible to render any enemy incapacitated in the blink of an eye. You can't fight when your muscles refuse to respond and your bowels are opened by pure sound. But as it is, our little boxes can cause excruciating pain in the ear canal and the skull and can disorient. Directed from the air, it can be extremely effective against ground forces.
Yeah, and us if you're not careful.
True. We would have to use it with care. We're used to fighting entirely from above ground, but it is directional, so we could use it to sweep ahead of our allies.
Now that, I'm glad to hear.
We may not talk much, but we have communications equipment, too. Not as advanced as Rhonda's, perhaps. Talking is her specialty, I think. However, we do have small personal transmitters and receivers. As we double on our craft, we can spare some for your use. They're simple to use, so your people can pick it up quickly, Ryan. We will be airborne most of the time, so your and Brianna's need for individual communication may be greater.
That's appreciated.
My pleasure. As I say, we spend most of our time airborne and don't carry much in the way of firearms. They're bulky, heavy, and the extra weight of ammunition is something we can't afford. We have these for personal defense if someone should get close. At the risk of sounding too confident, we're very good with rapiers in close quarters. Frankly, we have to be. The trick is not to get caught on the ground unless necessary.
I'm impressed, but you can't beat a blaster from more than arm's length.
A very good point, my friend, which is why we tend to use blasters as well.
Corwin indicated the weapons that had been stored in each parasail. They were a combination of Lugers, Brownings, and a Walther PPK. Each had spare clips. They were light yet powerful at mid-distance, and J.B. felt that Corwin and his people had made a good choice, suitable to their needs and limitations. Ryan let a flicker of a smile cross his lips for the first time in what seemed to him to be forever. So far, they had a limited arsenal, but one that could be utilized in a plan. As well, they still had Brianna's people to examine. If any of these technomads carried offensive tech, it would be her crew.
Well, time to put out, honey.
Very well.
With an imperious gesture, Brianna indicated that her people should empty the land yachts and show the array of equipment they carried. And as Ryan had expected, it was a much more impressive collection than the others. Declining to lower herself to explaining the equipment, she gestured to the black man to guide them through the armament laid out. It was indicative of her attitude that she had never used his name, and even now the companion still had no idea what he was called.
First off, you can see that Robert carries a crossbow, which has not just ordinary bolts, but an array of bolts tipped with poisons and explosives. Now, some of them also carry sonic charges that can cause ripples in solid objects and lead to molecular breakdown without any initial impact explosion, which can be useful for stealth. As for myself, I've noticed you looking at my blaster.
He held the white plastic weapon up for them to see.
Yep, it's pretty odd. Far as we know, this and the two others we carry were prototypes that were never mass-produced before Skydark. It's basically a rifle, but instead of firing cartridges, it fires small pulse bursts of energy. It's kind of like a laser, but in concentrated form. Can cut through metal like it was ice. And over there, you can see we have a couple of portable lasers.
He indicated the boxes and attached lances that lay outside Cedric and the chestnut-haired woman's yacht.
Cedric and Gwyn are the experts with those. They're good enough, but as I'm sure Ced would tell you at length, given the chance, the power units need a lot of recharging, and getting the juice ain't always easy. Now, we have personal transmitters and receivers, both locational and for communication. We, too, have spare stuff. I'm sure that we can share. It may be good for at least one of the parasails to have a spare themselves in the event of serious trouble.
He moved his head slightly. His eyes were still invisible, but his glance was obviously directed at Brianna, who nodded almost imperceptibly.
Now, you can see that we carry an array of firearms, rifles, pistols, and some SMGs. Now, I gather that your man JB is the expert, so he'll be able to assess their effectiveness better than me, right?
That's what I'll see and find out, yeah.
JB stepped forward and cast a knowing eye over the gathered ordnance. The rifles were a mixture of Lee Enfields, Sharps, and H&K sports models. He even noticed a lightweight weapon that had originally been designed for women. He recalled once seeing an H&K vid catalog on an old comp that called it one for the ladies, emphasizing its femininity. It was still Heckler & Koch, and for all its supposed femininity, could blast the balls off a fly at 100 yards. The handguns were the usual suspects, remade Colt Pythons and long-barreled pistols, Walthers and Lugers, Smith & Wesson snubby handmaids that proliferated in the Deathlands, all with a fair supply of reloads. He noted a couple of AK-47s, along with Uzis and MP5s. There were also some anti-tank Gren launchers, a couple of mortars, and two SMGs that he couldn't recognize. His questioning glance brought another grin, this time from the guy in the T-shirt.
A while back I found a lathe, some equipment. I cannibalized a few spares we had to see if it was possible to manufacture new blasters with what we got. They're okay, but they're not reliable. Bree says only I should use them, so if they fuck up, it's only the stoop who built them that gets chilled. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Well, honestly, they look like half-decent blasters under the circumstances.
The black man moved on to a selection of canisters, some of which were pre-dark, and some of which had the hallmarks of being manufactured from plastics and polycarbons in more recent times.
These are our pride and joy, though. This stuff is nerve gas. It causes paralysis, fits, and hallucinations, as well as alterations in perception that leave the enemy incapacitated. And that, my friends, is what we bring to this party.
You know, you seem a lot happier about this than you were a little while back. Care to share why?
Why do you care?
Because if I'm going to put my life and trust to some stranger, I'd like to know why I should have that trust. And you people weren't too keen before Blondie gave the nod.
The black man grinned.
Look, lady, I don't particularly care about you or your redhead friend. But I guess Bree's right in siding with you, because I figure One-Eye's argument is a good one. Those cold hearts that have her have done a lot of damage, and it's only a matter of time before they come for us. So why not head them off at the pass? Besides, I always did like a fight.
Sounds good enough to me.
Ryan looked around at the massed ordnance. Brianna's equipment was going to be useful, but its erratic nature gave him a problem. Rounda had basic equipment, but a good attitude. Corwin's people weren't born fighters, but they had some useful variant tech, and their aerial ability gave them another dimension in terms of tactics. Ryan looked at all of them in turn. His gaze settled longest on Brianna. He needed her fully on board, as her people were the best equipped, and also the most likely to break ranks if she said so. As his eye blazed into hers, it was as though she could read his thoughts.
Your call, One-Eye. The reputation of Ryan Carter and his people in combat precedes you. We'll go along with your plans, as long as they make sense.
Good enough. Hey, Jack, anything?
Nothing. Quiet as death out here.
You know, Ryan, it strikes me as strange. Whilst it is true that we have been doing this as quickly as possible, there has still been plenty of time for them to come after us. In such a circumstance, I have little doubt that you would have taken such a course of action. Now, why, I wonder, have they not done this?
Ryan looked to the skies above the dune, as if expecting an aerial attack to materialize from nowhere. What was the strategy from inside the redoubt? If they were in no hurry, then what the hell did they have to throw at this motley crew? He turned back to Doc.
You know, Doc, that's been bothering me, too.